This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 210. CJ and I are going to cover some of the latest news from Office 365, Microsoft Azure, and Google, recorded live August the 31st, 2017. While many IT teams struggle with the impact of deploying Office 365, Zscaler customers are experiencing 40% or greater network performance across file download times, as well as TCP and DNS connection times, compared to using next-gen firewalls and UTMs to route Office 365 traffic locally to the internet. While you may know Zscaler as the leader in cloud security, they also have hundreds of customers who are processing over 1.2 petabytes of Office 365 traffic monthly through the Zscaler cloud. Visit www.zscaler.com to learn more. I think I said August the 31st.
I just assumed that was your stutter.
Good morning, CJ. How are you today?
Good, mate. How are you?
Apparently a little over-caffeinated.
Over-caffeinated?
Over-caffeinated.
don't get caffeine and a catheter mixed up. That would be a horrible mistake.
I don't know. Sometimes you kind of need that when you have too much caffeine. It kind of makes you make frequent trips to go use the restroom.
Oh, dear.
So now that we got that out of the way, how are you this morning?
pretty good, actually. Very, very well, thank you. This past week went camping with my family for a couple of days, which was nice to get out of reception for a few days, which is always absolutely terrifying when you're running a small business, right? Because every time you come back into reception, you're like, is everything still working correctly? And the team were looking after things while I was away, obviously, which was great. But it's always... I've always got a little bit of that sort of nervous tick right as I get AT&T reception again and go, I wonder if the house is still standing. So fortunately, everything was great. So it was very relaxing. But now I'm back in the office and we're all hands to the pump getting ready for some very exciting new product announcements at Ignite. We've got a few weeks to go and... everything's underway.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I am racing myself to get the week prior to Ignite, I'm going to launch the first pre-release of my course under Voitanos for the SharePoint framework development. And I'm not going to have as much content that I would love to have. I think that my total plan for the outline of the entire course is somewhere around 45 modules or 40 chapters. And I think I'm looking like I'm going to have probably around 10, but I am going to have a cool little special deal where for the first 24 hours, people can get it for 50% what I'm going to ultimately charge for them. But the only people that are going to get that code in their email, it's not going to be published on the website or anything. It's just going to be sent to the people who are on my mailing list on Voitanos. So if you're interested and you're listening and you want to get access to that code as well as other codes in the future, you must be on my mailing list. I'm going to send it out to those people first.
Nice. Very nice.
Hey, got another bit of...
That's exciting.
Oh, my God. Well, it'll be... I think on the 19th, it'll be exciting when it goes live right now, kind of like the mode that you're in. I am frantically like writing scripts, recording demos, finding bugs, bugging things, recording, producing. I look at it and I say I have 19 days, but man, it is... I wish I had like 39 days or 29, whatever. Just it's amazing how fast time goes.
Yeah, it'll only feel like it'll accelerate as well.
It is. It already has. But hey, I got a bit of two other bit of little things here that are kind of interesting that are kind of cool on the geek side. So you know how Tesla does a referral program?
Yeah.
So for those of you who aren't...
Have you got a new Tesla yet?
No, I don't. Actually, yes, I do.
Did Elon come and personally deliver one to you?
No, he didn't, but I do have a new Tesla on the way. They do this thing. They've done it different programs in the past where if, as an owner, I have a little link that if you decide to go buy a car, then in the past, it would get you $1,000 off and it would also get me $1,000 credit with Tesla, which I just use for like scheduled service and stuff, which seems to be overpriced. But anyway, the program they're running right now is they have different award levels for as many referrals as you have. So if, let's say, CJ, you don't have a Tesla, you want to go buy one right now. If you buy a car today, brand new from Tesla, starting next year, when you use a supercharger, you will get a certain amount of kilowatt hours included in your purchase, but then everything on top of that, you would end up having to pay for, kind of like on a credit card or something like that.
It's like a prepaid gas card or whatever.
It's kind of like that, yeah. You like, I don't know how exactly that they're going to charge for it. They've talked about different options, but I haven't really kept up on it. My car is, I've been grandfathered into supercharging is free for life. Now, for you, it would only cost you like 50% the cost of gas. So it's still a discount, but you still end up paying for it. Well, if I gave you this code, you would get not only $1,000 off of your car, but you would also get supercharging for life. So there's a benefit to you. Now, the kickback to me is interesting. The first referral, which I have, somebody bought a car off my code. So the first referral I have is I got a coupon to order and get a free Tesla, but the little radio flyer one-seater electric car for kids. So I have one of those in my inbox.
That is so cool.
Yep, I have one of those in my inbox. So I can order that and get it for free. Although the weight limit and the size and everything, my kids are too big for it. So I'm trying to figure out a way to be able to either sell it or probably to make a donation to a local like charity or something like that.
I got
to
tell you, I would pay good money to see you riding around your neighborhood in that.
I would try to. I'm going to get a red one though. So that's one. I have that one. The second one that I got from somebody else who used my code is a discount code and to get to the front of the list to get the solar tiles when they're available for your roof, which I can't use that because I already have panels on my roof. So anybody that wants that, I'd be happy to give it to them.
Ooh, that's a big deal.
Yeah. So if you want to buy a Tesla and you use my code, not only will you get $1,000 off and supercharging for life, but I'll also give you my code for my solar discount.
Very nice. Man, they know how to do this, don't they?
Oh, wait, it gets better, dude. It gets better. The third one that I have, I actually got this one the other day. I went to go check this and show it to somebody. I noticed that somebody just bought a car. I don't know who the individual is. I see their name, but I've never heard their name before. The third one is what's called a set of arachnid wheels. So they're 21-inch special rims that you can get from Tesla. And I have a set of free rims that are coming now, free wheels.
That is super nice.
Yeah.
So hold on. So somebody bought a $100,000 car,
yep,
and put your code in and you don't know who they are.
No, I have their name. Like in the app, I can see the people's names.
Yeah, but you don't know who they are.
No, I put it on Twitter and I just said, hey, does anybody want to get $1,000 off their car? And apparently somebody did.
What? Somebody was like, oh, sweet.
Yeah.
Well, I'll put AC's code in my Tesla order.
Yeah. So the first one came from a guy that I worked out with. The second one was Shane Young. He went and got one. The third one somebody just grabbed my code and used it.
Have you sort of made it your mission in life to find this person and thank them? Like
Not yet.
What's the protocol?
The next one is the one that I will make it my mission. I don't have this one yet, but I have until the end of the year to close this one. The fourth one is a free Powerwall Series 2 Founder Edition.
Oh my goodness, that sounds really nice.
Yeah, so there's that one. And then the fifth one is an all-inclusive paid trip to get to go watch the semi-truck unveil. I don't know when that is, but that one would be cool. But
that's cool, man. Wow, they really know how to do the whole reward system. That's super cool.
Oh, it's freaking awesome. It's really cool. But at any rate, anyways, that's just kind of, I thought you'd find that kind of interesting. So
yeah, that's really cool.
Cool.
What do we got on the cards this week? We're going to cover some news, right?
We are going to cover Give CodeShip Pro a try. More teams than ever are using Docker and Linux for their .NET applications. CodeShip Pro is a fully customizable continuous integration and delivery service in the cloud with the best support for any team that is using .NET and Docker together and can run builds on Linux environments. CodeShip Pro comes with ready-to-use integrations for Azure, including Azure Container Service and more. It also offers a free, convenient local CLI tool that allows you to run your builds locally and is the only hosted CI/CD tool that lets you build your own environment, giving you the most control and flexibility no matter what tool or stack you're trying to use. Check out CodeShip Pro's free plan that grants 100 builds per month, unlimited projects, and unlimited users. Open source projects are always free on CodeShip. Visit CodeShip.com today or check out CodeShip.com/features/pro to learn more. First, we have some news here. We got some Office 365 news. We got some Azure news. We got some Google news.
Google stuff, yeah.
I thought I can go through the two 365 ones because I've been kind of close to this if you want.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the first one is there was a release. There's two SharePoint framework related things. So the first one is they updated the Yeoman generator to version 1.2 and they also released the extensions to release candidate 0. So the generator change, really, there wasn't too much of a change to that. I mean, there's some stuff under the covers, like it now supports TypeScript 2.4. It also supports a latest version of the Office UI Fabric and some of the type definitions for React. But they also did the RC0 changes. So the RC0 update was for the extensions. Now you can do it in a developer tenant, or you can do it in your first release tenants. And this is, I got bit by this, is they were in the middle of rolling this out. And I did a session at the SharePoint Saturday, Charlotte, this past weekend. And no exaggeration, myself and another guy named Chris Kent were both doing presentations on extensions that day. Our stuff worked right after the keynote. And then we went to go do our sessions and it broke right before our sessions. So like we were in the middle of a rollout and it was a bummer. So
yeah, gotcha.
So that's a big update. So I got a link to that in the show notes and you'll see a lot more details to it as well over the next few weeks.
I'm sure you're probably going to blog about this, but didn't you also mention, I think just privately between us, you'd said there's some breaking changes that are going in that are as part of that?
Yeah, there's some stuff and it doesn't, I haven't figured out exactly what, there's two things that they've done. They changed a schema for a configuration file. So basically when you make a reference, for those of you doing SharePoint framework stuff, if you look at the config.json file in the externals piece where you configure your bundle or configure the SharePoint framework to not include files in the bundle and instead reference them from a CDN, the syntax of that changed from version 1 to version 2, and they're going to support both of them. The new one is an improvement. It allows us to, where in the past, everything in a project was put in one bundle. Now it allows us to create multiple bundles from stuff in the same project. So I can say this component, and this component go in this bundle, and these other ones go in this bundle. So that's one. The breaking change, it looks like there are people who had an older version of the generator who all of a sudden are no longer able to do like an NPM install to restore all the packages. And at the time of you and I sitting down to record this, that issue is still open and it looks like it's still trying to figure out exactly what the resolution is. So I don't think I can really say like, you know, what the issue is there just yet.
Gotcha.
The other bit of news is that they also released this thing. It's called the GDPR Activity Hub. And what it is an open source reference solution that you can kind of think of this as like a starter kit for building a management hub for the European Union's global data protection regulation. The goal of this thing is to give customers and partners a way to start and play with a reference solution in order to keep track of all the fundamental events, requests, tasks, activities that are required to be compliant with the new GDPR regulations that are happening over in Europe.
Yeah. Gotcha.
It includes a bunch of stuff.
That is obviously a huge deal in the EU. And we should actually get somebody on to talk about its implications with cloud software because it's very wide-reaching and will affect anybody building and selling solutions and things like that. So we should definitely have a chat about that.
Yeah, definitely.
Cool. Hey, that's nice news. Do you want to hear some really, really shockingly bad news?
Uh-oh.
Google yesterday, and in particular the Google Cloud Platform, had an outage that almost lasted 24 hours.
And it wasn't just a normal outage. That was a networking outage, wasn't it?
Yeah. So it was one component of GCP, which was their network load balancers.
Some news.
And so it started yesterday on August 30th at 52 minutes past midnight. Basically, they were having issues with network connectivity. They figured out, or they posted at about 5:30 in the morning, so roughly 4 hours later or so, that they're experiencing an issue with a subset of load balancers in US East, US Central, Europe West, Northeast Asia, Asia East, not being able to connect to backends. And it got more painful from there. So updates at 6, 6:30, 7 o'clock, 7:30, 8 o'clock. They tried to patch something. That didn't work. They said that put in some mitigation and that didn't work and then came up with another fix at 10:30 in the morning yesterday that their mitigation had completed for new instances, but existing instances of network load balancers need to be reconfigured. So everybody else was still down. They were still working through fixing up everybody's NLBs. But if you didn't want to wait, then there were a few scripts you could run to fix up your network load balancer. So finally, at about 11 a.m. yesterday, they gave customers those instructions. And then by roughly 8 o'clock yesterday night, so not quite 24 hours, but getting close.
Yeah.
They said that the issue with the network load balance has been resolved for all affected projects. We will conduct an internal investigation and make appropriate improvements, and they'll provide a more detailed analysis. But let's just say I was pretty stoked that we were running on Azure yesterday.
Yeah, Azure's little outage that they had, what, a week or two ago with the certificate yet again expired only lasted about 14 or 15 minutes.
And that was only for the portal, right?
Yeah.
It was for their website, not for anybody running on it, you know? And nobody, let's be frank, like it's easy to be smug about these things, but nobody's immune. But it does feel pretty bad that it went from 52 minutes past midnight to 8:18 the next night.
I saw your tweet on this. Did you see mine?
No.
I just added it to the show notes. I'll leave it in the show notes, but I'll let somebody, I'm not going to say what I actually said on the tweet, but I'll let you just look at it and see your reaction.
So I have a friend of mine who works at Google pretty high up and runs a bunch of their site reliability engineering teams. And I sent him a note yesterday. I was like, so how's your day going?
Yeah,
that was, I bet there was some fires burning over at Google yesterday. Anyway, nobody's immune to this sort of stuff. It's par for the course with the cloud, but you kind of expect not quite that length of outage, to be frank.
Yeah, it's one of those, sometimes I just think a GIF comment is the best way to deal with these things.
Yeah, fair enough. Let me just check out your response. Hold on. Yep, that's perfect. Check out the show notes. We can't really repeat it on the air.
No, I'm not going to repeat that.
Moving right along.
Hey, more Google news. There was something absolutely epic. You know, CJ and I said that we do this news stuff. We do our podcast generally on Tuesdays. And I swear that, you know, we do it at around 11 o'clock or 11:30 East Coast time, 8:30 Pacific. And we get off the call. And I can't tell you how many times that around like within either during the time that we're recording this or within about 10 minutes of finishing a recording, some epic piece of news breaks. And we're like, oh, you got to be kidding me. We got to wait another week on this. And we record a week ahead of time. So it really, everybody waits 2 weeks. And last week that happened because right after we finished recording last week, Google announces Chrome for the enterprise.
Yeah, and not the browser.
No. This is the OS. This is a shot across the Windows bow.
This is not to be underestimated how big a deal this is. I think when I saw this came out, I thought, wow, this is game on, right? So Google have Chrome OS, right? Which, you know, it comes on laptops and whatnot. And kind of one of their big problems in the enterprise is like, it wasn't really that manageable. It wasn't really sort of enterprise grade, all that sort of stuff. There's a bunch of things that enterprises need. And Chrome OS Enterprise, whatever they want to call it, is definitely a move in the right direction of even being able to sit at the table with a big business and talk about using their stuff. Because without these things, without MDM and management of devices and enrollment and domain joining machines and rolling out group policy and all of those things, it's just impossible to manage devices at a big company, right? And so Google have gone and added that, and that is just, this is just huge, I think. Huge. I mean, they've got a very long road, right? And by no means does this mean they're going to win against Microsoft immediately, but at least it gets them a seat at the table.
It gets them a seat at the table, but it's of everyone, of anybody who's going to fire a shot at Windows, this is one of those companies that you kind of step back and say, I'm not saying they're going to take down Windows. I'm not saying that they're going to give Windows a run for their money. This is just one of those things. I want to sit back and I want to watch this because this is going to be interesting over the next year or so and watch what kind of an impact this really has. I mean, you come across schools all the time who they're using Chromebooks for everything. I talked to different kids, and I was just having breakfast with a friend of mine when I was up in Charlotte right before I came home. And she's like, yeah, she's looking to get her computer for her son. And he is 12, 13, and he wants nothing other than a Chromebook because that's what he has at school and he loves it. I'm like, you know,
wow,
it's interesting, right? I mean, it's curious to see. And you see, you know, you come from that grassroots thing. It's a similar thing that I used to hear when iPhones were just coming out and they were doing the guerrilla marketing where they're coming up from the bottom to the top of an organization instead of forcing this whole bring your own device thing to work instead of people saying, you know, no, you're going to have a BlackBerry. And if you want an iPhone, you got to buy it yourself.
Yeah, exactly. That is a big deal, right? Because especially for EDU, I mean, just for EDU, even just EDU by itself, right? Being able to manage Chromebooks at scale with enterprise tools is a huge deal. But then how that trickles into businesses outside of the EDU space will be interesting. But yeah, it includes stuff like managed Google Play. So you'd be able to, you know, manage what these devices have access to, publishing applications, all that sort of stuff. Managed Chrome extensions and browser management. So being able to push out standardized sets of extensions and stuff, printer management, AD integration, Active Directory integration is what I mean by that, single sign-on support, cloud-based fleet management, so management of devices in the cloud. What else we got here? Ephemeral sessions and kiosk modes, managed networks and proxies, managed OS updates, that's obviously a huge one, theft prevention, not quite sure what that means, but probably wiping devices and stuff, and then 24/7 enterprise support, which is obviously a big deal for companies when something goes wrong, being able to call. And it's $50 per device annually.
No, it's interesting. It's an interesting model there. I'd be curious to see how this goes.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I think they've got a massive uphill battle against Microsoft in this regard, that they're not likely to win for some time. But this is definitely a step in the right direction for them if they want to get serious about the enterprise.
Totally agree. It'd be fun to watch.
Hey, speaking of pretty sweet devices, moving on to some Azure news real briefly. Because we don't want to talk about Google the whole time, right? How would you like a virtual machine with 20 terabytes of RAM?
You just blew through my entire fantasy football budget in 25 seconds.
Yeah, my MSDN Azure credit just disappeared in a fraction of a second. So Jason Zander, who's a CVP over in the Azure team, tweeted a screenshot of a console screenshot that he took of a virtual machine running SAP HANA with 20 terabytes of RAM and 960 CPU cores.
This is an epic tweet. I love how he says 20 terabytes of RAM for SAP HANA, pinstripes optional.
Yeah, the largest for any public cloud. How cool is that?
It's really cool. It's like, you know, use case. I mean, like, does SAP HANA really need 20 terabytes and you'd put that all in a single machine?
Look, demos at Ignite have nothing to do with do you really need it.
Oh, that's right. Okay? That's true. Forgot.
Right. They're gearing up for keynote demos by the looks of it. And yeah, it's not just because you can or you should. It's because you can. And in the wise words of Spence Harbour, or maybe I've got it around the wrong way. But anyway, yes, it's probably totally pointless for the majority of people in the world, but it's kind of cool. And so SAP HANA, I don't know a lot about it. I understand that it's like a big in-memory database kind of thing. And for real-time data processing and business processes and stuff like that. And so I think scaling individual machines is kind of a big deal. Not 100% sure. I don't know enough about it. But yeah, 20 terabytes of RAM. Woof.
Yeah, that's pretty big.
Yeah. Huge, 960 cores, boom.
So doing a pivot and going away from the let's spend money as fast as we absolutely can in Azure, I'm going to pivot the other direction and see how slowly can we spend it?
Yes, that's what we want.
So Azure announced a public preview of Azure Archival Blob Storage and Blob Level Tiering. So last year they announced a cool blob storage, which is essentially it's a way, if you're familiar with AWS's S3, they have a Glacier service.
Yeah.
Hot storage is what we're used to. Cool storage allows you to specify that data is going to be used infrequently, and so it takes longer to get access to it. So it's great it was always great for backups and stuff. Now, though, they're announcing a public preview of Archive Blob Storage, which is designed to help organizations reduce their storage costs even further by storing relatively rarely accessed data in the lowest priced tiered pricing yet. In addition to this, they're also introducing a public preview of Blob Level Tiering, which allows you to optimize storage costs easily by managing the lifecycle of your data across these tiers at the object level. Now, I've looked at this a little bit inside of the portal, and they make it, man, I tell you, if you play with S3 with this, they make it a hell of a lot easier on Azure. So on S3, you had hot storage and cold storage, or Glacier. And in order to get something to Glacier, you had to put it in hot storage and then set up a policy to move it over to cold storage. in Azure, you put it on the blob and then you configure the container. Is it a hot, cold, or archive storage? And then you can change it after the fact, making it so much easier than it was before. I've been getting close to moving my my NAS device that I have at home. It currently backs up to AWS, and I just need to set up a job to pull everything from AWS over to Azure. But I need to do it, you know, between the two clouds, not pull it down to do that, so that I can change my NAS to start working off the Azure backup. And I was going to use cold storage, but now, I mean, man, I'm going to go with the archival. It's even probably, it'll be even cheaper there. So
yeah, that's nice. Yeah, I got to take a look at that. CrashPlan, who am I? My choice of backup agent right now at home, have announced dropping support for home users. And I think we've got a year or whatever's left on your subscription to move. So either I'm going to move to one of their business subscriptions or do something else with an agent on-prem that backs up to Azure or something like that.
The price difference there is pretty cheap. I mean, it's very different. The archive pricing doesn't have any pricing associated with it right now, but cold storage, like hot storage, to cold storage is about 50% the cost right now. The thing is, though, is that on cold storage, any access or write operations or read or data retrieval, it's more expensive than hot storage. But that's the point. Once you put it there, it's cheaper to let it sit there. It's more expensive to get it out. So
yeah, gotcha. In other Azure news, they've announced some tools to help you better deploy continuously into Azure Container Service with Jenkins. So Jenkins is a tool for automating deployments and builds, CI/CD, that's really popular. And Azure have done some work to make it, or Microsoft have done some work to make it super easy to use that to deploy into ACS. So in a nutshell, there's this thing called the VM Agent plugin that Jenkins uses, which means that when there's a job that's happening in Jenkins, it can spin up a virtual machine in Azure when there's a new job, do the job, and then deprovision the VM when it's done, right? And that's used by ci.jenkins.io quite a lot. And apparently, according to the article, the .NET Core team use it as well for reducing their monthly build costs by 75%. Anyway, that's current state stuff. And that spins up a virtual machine to do the job and then gets rid of it. But now with ACS, Azure Container Service, they've built a new plugin, I think they call it. Instead of spinning up a virtual machine to do the Jenkins job, you can spin up a container instance. So you spin up a container, it runs the job, and then nukes the container. So instead of a few minutes to spin up a virtual machine, you can spin up a Jenkins container or a Jenkins agent container or something like that. I'm not sure if I might be bastardizing the terminology here, but you can spin up one of these containers, it'll do the job and then get rid of it all in a few seconds, which is pretty sweet, dude.
It is pretty sweet. Jenkins is slick. It's one of those, I mean, I spent a little bit of time looking at it. It's if you do a lot of build stuff, like I know that you guys use Travis, I think.
We use a combination. Actually, we're moving away from Travis to Docker Build. So
that's right.
At the moment, we're sort of 50% in the Travis camp and 50% in the Docker Build camp. But we're slowly moving our build process over to Docker Build, which is a cloud-based service.
This is neat, though, because, I mean, one of the cool things about Jenkins is that it allows you, it gives you a very much like a pipeline. So if you're familiar with like working with, like, say, a PowerShell pipeline, you can put different things into the pipeline that you want to have done. And it's much, and there's a lot of plugins you can actually put in there as well. So this is cool, though. I mean, it makes a lot of sense. You know, you don't want to have an infrastructure set up to deal with your builds all the time. And instead, you know, having something like ACI, like the Azure Container Instances, when you start a build, I don't want to have VMs just sitting around. I want to have that spun up on the fly, go run that stuff right away, do all the builds, do all the commits, da-da-da, report, and then go away and don't charge me anything. It's a great model.
Yeah. Also, probably worth at this point shouting out to our sponsor, CodeShip, who also have offerings in this space for doing cloud-based builds of your stuff and deployments as well. So definitely go check them out. We started with Travis a couple of years ago, and they're a much better tools for that sort of stuff now, including CodeShip. And Jenkins is much more do-it-yourself, right? You have to do a lot more work yourself than things like SaaS offerings like CodeShip Pro and stuff like that. But, you know, pick the right tool for the job, obviously, but there's lots of options there.
Yeah, CodeShip does. I know they're similar in the sense that they use containers to do all that stuff. But then what they also do is you have the ability to pull that container down to do all your testing locally, but then they're the hosted service, where with Jenkins, you still, very much like Kubernetes, you still have to babysit one VM, the master, who's the orchestrator of everything. So you did a really good interview with CodeShip back in episode 201 to talk to them a lot about their service and how it works. So people should go check that out if you're interested in something like that.
Yeah, definitely.
But hey, you mentioned a second ago, you mentioned .NET Core. So I'm going to switch gears a little bit and do a little bit of .NET Core news, but not on the Azure Stack.
Ooh.
Sorry, I shouldn't say Azure Stack as a product. Not on the Azure platform. There is a, if on the Azure side, you're familiar with some, our developers are probably familiar with something called App Insights, which I've been spending a lot more time with recently. And it's amazing how, what you can do with this. But at any rate, there's another product that's out there that started, it was a little bit of AWS. It was a little bit of, I think, Rackspace or OpenStack. Google's a big pusher of it, and it's called Stackdriver. I look at Stack, I've played a little bit with Stackdriver on the Google Cloud platform, and it looks very much like App Insights, or it's very similar in the sense. There's some things that both that one does, the other one doesn't, vice versa. So I'm not going to parse it there. But what's cool about this one is that now they've announced general availability of a Stackdriver diagnostics integration for ASP.NET Core applications, which is going to make it really easy for you to integrate Stackdriver logging, error reporting, and tracing into your .NET Core applications with just a little bit of code and a little bit of effort. What's neat about this is that what I've seen in the past with Stackdriver is that if I had like a Node.js application, I would be able to take a snapshot of that application, like of the memory, and be able to inspect it without interrupting the application's execution time. But I could then parse through the entire heap or the memory dump while the application's running, but continue to let the application run. So essentially just do quick snapshot of the memory and then let me go through and debug that one little bit while everyone else is still working and stuff. So this is, Stackdriver's really impressive. I don't know if App Insights lets me do that.
That's pretty sweet. Yeah, I'll have to take a look at that. Isn't it interesting that Google seem to be pretty keen on .NET Core?
You got Chris Sells is over there now, who's a evangelist for him, and Chris Sells is huge on, he's spent a lot of time on their .NET Core evangelizing their offering they have around .NET Core. So I know Google is definitely embracing of .NET Core since it's come out.
And of course, John Skeet, who we, I think, mentioned on the show last week, is huge in the .NET world, works for Google. So yeah, they just seem to be doing more in the space, which I find really cool.
I love seeing the Google Cloud platform adding a lot of really cool core dev stuff, because what it does is it helps Azure, at least from a customer point of view, it helps Azure because it forces them to keep going forward. Competition's a good thing. Love seeing both of them pushing each other.
And I just love C# as a language, and it's nice to see it being more broadly used other places too.
Cool.
Amazon have got better EC2 Elastic GPU support for Windows users. Small piece of news. If you're a Windows user and you use AWS as a customer, you can hook up to some lower spec GPU sizes, 1 gig, 2 gig, 4 gig, or 8 gig, and all support OpenGL for crunching numbers, basically. Much, much, much cheaper, 5 cents an hour for the 1 gig model versus what it used to be at 76 cents per hour. But note that these are GPUs that you access over a network connection, so they're not directly connected to the hardware that you're on. So a little bit higher latency you've got to plan for with bandwidth and all that sort of stuff. But if you're a Windows customer on AWS, they've got a few options for GPU access there too.
Cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
Hey, I think we've kind of gone through a bunch of news in this one. I think it's time for us to make...
Should we move on to some picks?
I think we should do a couple of picks here. What if you could take any process your teams use to get work done and make it happen automatically? What if you could save countless hours and help people work better together? Nintex can make that happen. With the Nintex platform, work flows from person to person, system to system, to the cloud and back, and it flows in and out of the tools that you use every day. With Nintex, work flows so your teams can work smarter, work faster, and be more connected than ever. So I have two picks this week. I don't know how many you have.
I just have one, but it's kind of a biggie. So I'll stick with the one.
But let me go. I'm going to do both of mine then, because I'll let you go with yours, because I kind of like yours a little bit more than any of them. I like it because I can't afford it right now.
Yeah.
So, this actually changed since I actually posted the link. This is awesome. So I have one of those shiny, brand new MacBooks that only has USB-C ports on the sides of it. I actually really like that too. I like the fact that I only have one port. I don't mind the dongles and stuff. I don't really have a whole lot of dongles associated with it. I like the flexibility of it. Anyway.
But at home,
what I've wanted to do is I've wanted to have some sort of a dock that I can easily go through and plug everything into. Now, I've had like this little dongle that has a couple USB ports, an Ethernet port, a HDMI port, SD card, mini SD. And then it also had a port where I could actually plug in power. So then I would just have that sitting on my desk with everything kind of plugged into it. And then I would just plug that one thing into my laptop and I'd be good to go. Well, there is a Thunderbolt 3 dock that came out and it actually is shipping as of now. It was pre-released prior to today, but I pre-ordered mine about a month ago. It's a Thunderbolt 3 dock. It's got 13 ports on it. On the back of it, it's got four USB 3 ports, high-powered ones. It, strangely enough, has a FireWire port. Also, interesting enough, it's got a digital audio port coming out of it. It's got an Ethernet port. It's got a mini display port coming out of it and two USB-C ports. So one of the USB-C ports you plug into your laptop and then the other one you can do for whatever. So what I've done, I got this guy, and on the front of it, it's got a headphone port, an SD port, and a USB 3 port. So it's got four USB ports total, one on the front, three on the back.
No, it's got four on the back.
Sorry, five ports total. Yeah, four on the back.
Yeah, five ports, yeah.
This thing is awesome. Now, it's not cheap. It's $300, but I've had it now I've been using mine for about 3 days now or 2 days now, and it works flawlessly. The cable that it comes with is crazy small. It's only like a half a meter, which is, frankly, it's just not long enough. I had to drop another $50 for a really like a 2 meter, 40 gigabyte USB-C connection. But this thing it powers my laptop. I now can just sit down, plug one thing in, everything works. This is the first time I've actually been able to do.
Does it power your laptop at the same time?
Yes.
Oh, no way.
It does everything.
So it'll charge your machine at the same time?
Yep. So I have my power cable and my power brick for my laptop just stays in my backpack. And now I just have one cable I plug into my laptop and it's everything. It's fantastic.
That's really nice. It doesn't look ludicrously large either. So you could travel with it if you wanted, right?
Yeah, you did. Well, you have to have, it has its own power. So.
Oh, gotcha.
So I'm putting my phone up next to it.
Oh, of course.
I would say it's about, based on an iPhone 7 that I have, it's about 125% deeper. It's about an inch tall and maybe like the width. If you take your thumb and your pinky finger and you extend them and try and do like a Surf's Up dude thing, it's about that long.
Gotcha.
Of course, if you want real specs, you can go to the website and actually get the real numbers there. But
what do you mean? Pinky and index finger measurements aren't okay?
Yeah, is this going to fit right here? Yeah. It's, you know what? I tell you what, it's about twice the size of a Surface Pro Hub. I've got one of those on my desk too.
Oh yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Cool.
I love it. So that's one of my picks. Go check that out. I got it. I love it. They're shipping it now. The other one of my picks, CJ, The New Yorker, I actually put this as our picks. We had two people actually tweet us this week. The New Yorker put an article out this past weekend. It was how the Voyager Golden Record was made. 40 years ago, we sent a message to all the extraterrestrials that are out there. We made a golden record, put a lot of stuff on it. This article talks about how they made it, and it's pretty cool.
That is so cool. I'm going to have to read it all. I briefly scanned it, but didn't get a chance to look any more deeply at it. But yeah, that looks pretty interesting.
It's cool. Definitely cool.
Very nice. There's a sort of an ancillary story to that around, I think, Gene Kranz. I read his book recently. You did too, right?
I just finished it.
It was not an option?
Yep.
Yeah, how he snuck down to one of the satellites or something they were putting in orbit and snuck a plaque onto it.
Yeah.
Did you hear about that? Yeah, that's pretty cool. It's like, if you ask, they're going to say no. So we might as well just get these plaques made up, cruise down there and stick them on the spacecraft.
It's kind of like, it's like what they did with the Curiosity rover, right? They put that little Morse code in the wheel and they said they needed some holes in the wheel to be able to figure out like how far the wheel rotated. And they put Morse code in there that said JPL in it.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Really cool. Hey, my pick, sticking on the space-related theme, Lego are coming out with their largest set ever, and it's a new Millennium Falcon. It's the Lego 75192 UCS, which means Ultimate Collector Series, Millennium Falcon official set. So, you know, there was a big Millennium Falcon a while ago. I think it was like 5,000 pieces or something. And it was about 10 years ago it came out. And it was originally, I think, $500 in the Lego store, and now you can buy them new on eBay for 10 grand. So kind of a big deal. Anyway, there's a new Millennium Falcon coming out. It is 7,541 pieces. So it is the biggest Lego set ever built or ever made. It is so big that the box comes with a set of retractable wheels.
Mm-hmm.
So you can wheel it out of the store. because it is huge. It is officially huge. Unfortunately, it's going to cost $800 US or £649 or €800. And it'll be available on the 1st of October for VIPs. Sorry, VIP early access on the 14th of September, but it'll be shipping on the 1st of October. But apparently, they are in stores today to take a look at.
Ooh.
So apparently, they're going to be on for viewing, your viewing pleasure. But it's the new Millennium Falcon. As you very astutely pointed out, it's not the old Millennium Falcon. It's the one from the new movies. And it's got minifigs in it, like BB-8 and... oh, gosh, who was the other one that you pointed out?
Finn and Rey,
that's right, yeah. Yes, yeah, so it's the sort of the new fancy Millennium Falcon. It looks amazing, and it looks to be at minifig scale, almost. So, if you know what I mean by that, right? But you can stick the minifigures in the cockpit, and it kind of looks roughly to what the scale would be in the movie, which is pretty sweet.
I wonder what the scale would be in relation to the space shuttle and the Saturn V Lego?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. All I'm saying is, take my money.
Yeah.
The Saturn V was a tough one to sneak past the missus. This one is going to be, I mean, she understands it, right? She gets it, but she's like, yeah. Well, no, she doesn't really get it. She's sort of like, all right, you're a weirdo. Okay, sure. This one is going to be kind of a tough one to sneak past the goalie because $800, oh my God.
I think this would be, in my house right now, this might be the equivalent of my wife going out to check the mail and immediately walking right back in and going, what the hell is a Ferrari doing in our driveway? I'd be like, yes, I bought a Ferrari. Like, take it back.
Yeah. And so even if I was lucky to sneak one of these past her and go, hey, I really want this. And she goes, okay, cool. This will go against my philosophy of buying two of everything because $1,600 on two Millennium Falcons? Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen.
You know, I mean, it would be an investment. And I mean, you could... I mean, hold on.
I love your justification.
Yeah, let's take this seriously, right? So I'm one of the fortunate people that still have some Facebook stock from the IPO. So loving the cost basis of around $37. I mean, I could sell some stock and buy two of these. One of them will be an investment. The other one will be to build. And... this is a limited run.
I tell you what, by the time your kids go to college, it'll be worth a year of tuition.
Do you guarantee that?
No.
Nah, shit.
It's just a guess. But I think it will be.
Man, it sure is tempting, isn't it?
It's going to be, yeah, it's very tempting. It's kind of so here's what happened when the original Millennium Falcon came out. Vicky and I had arrived in the States not long before. We were in the Lego store in Bellevue Square. I was like, wow, that Millennium Falcon looks amazing. I want one of those. She was like, $500? That's ridiculous. There's no way. Like, that's just completely absurd. Fast forward a few years. Hey, honey, remember that Millennium Falcon I wanted? Yeah, it's $10,000 on eBay now. What the? She goes, wow, you should have really bought one back then.
I just kind of look at her like, yeah, I have a friend who he doesn't listen to the show. He just has nothing to do with SharePoint. Actually, he might listen to the show. I have no idea. He does have something to do with SharePoint because I've actually done a SharePoint class with him before. Anyway, great guy, works for JPL. And I know he has a couple of the original ones that are still in the original shipping boxes, not in the Lego boxes, but in the outer shipping boxes that came from the containers.
Oh, yeah. I wonder about the resale value of those now that this is coming out, but I suspect they'll hold their value reasonably well because they're an original set and they're not making more of those, which this is a different set, right? So that's good, but it's probably going to impact them a little bit.
You know, I just opened up Facebook real quick just to see if I could see how many he had in there. And of course, 1 hour ago, he just posted the Lego video and tagged me on. He says, it's here. Now's your chance, Andrew. And I'm like, damn it. I don't need this, but there's a video showing it being built on the Facebook now.
You should start a Kickstarter. Let's get AC a Millennium Falcon.
I tell you what, let's do this. Like the second Kickstarter. First Kickstarter is buy AC's SharePoint Framework course. That one will help me get this past the wife.
And that sounds so much more realistic and serious than this, but yeah, not quite as exciting.
Oh.
Sorry.
Oh, man, cool.
Rest in peace, your wallet, basically.
Man, that's nuts. Hey, Yeah, so that's about everything I got this week. Or no, you got
one last thing to wrap up on. A quick shout out to our good friends at Nintex who are sponsoring the show. They are sticking with us as a sponsor, so they have renewed their sponsorship agreement, which is very nice of them, obviously. If you haven't listened to their spot, go check it out for Nintex Workflow Cloud. But I just thought I'd throw that out there, that again, we're very thankful to our sponsors, and Nintex have obviously been with us for the past 20 episodes and are going to stick with us for another 20. So thanks again to the team over at Nintex.
Hey, you know what else? I'm going to throw this out there too. We get people asking us all the time. And when I say all the time, I'm not really exaggerating when I say this. We get people asking us quite frequently, how can we support the show? We did the t-shirt thing on Cafe Press. CJ and I don't get any money for that, okay? But the show costs money, costs time and everything to put together. And our sponsors do an absolutely bang-up job helping us keep the show going and to offset the costs and stuff associated with it. You want to help the show? Go on Twitter and tweet at Nintex Workflow Cloud, at CodeShip, at Zscaler, at Valid. Tell them, hey, thanks. We heard you on the MS Cloud, on the at MS Cloud Show podcast. Thanks for supporting the podcast. Let them know that you're hearing about them on this show. That helps them see that they're getting a return on their investment on the show, that their message is getting out. So we really appreciate that.
Absolutely. That's a great way to support them is, or support the show is to go check them out. That we obviously only pick sponsors that have, that we feel will be useful and interesting to our audience. So yeah, definitely worth checking out.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Hey, CJ.
Cool.
Another show in the books.
Yes. We will see you at Ignite, obviously. We're getting closer.
We are getting much closer. We're getting very close. And hey, everybody, we will see you guys in hopefully at Ignite coming up soon. We will have a live show at Ignite on the Tuesday. Check our email. We're going to send emails out, let you guys know what our plans are for that.
If you have a login to the My Ignite website, go add it to your session calendar because the podcast is in the session browser. So far, I think 457 people have added it to their session list. We've only got room for 100. It would be really nice to fill the room, obviously. But, you know, often people will add a lot of sessions to their calendar and then not show up to them. So, you know, we're not expecting 500 people to show up or anything. But definitely go add it to your calendar and get it on your books for the week. It's on Tuesday morning, I think, right?
Yep. Tuesday morning. We'll have more details about the timing and everything as the show gets closer. We definitely will have it and be publishing our Ignite news. But hey, you want to catch up at Ignite? Reach out to us. We've already had one or two people send us a message on Twitter, send a message to us through the site. Let us know. We'd love to link up with guys. We got stickers.
Yeah. And we'll have new stickers. Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. Hey, CJ, another good week. And I will catch up with you next week.
Sounds good.
Cheers, bud.
Ciao.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show, and we'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a wave or an MP3 and provide a link so that we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is brought to you by Keith Ritchie. For more information on Keith's music, head to music.kritchie.com. You can subscribe to us in iTunes and the Google Play Store by searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook, searching for Microsoft Cloud Show, or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up to our mailing list by heading over to our website and entering your email to interact with us, participate in upcoming interviews, and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.